Okay, so we're kind of following what we did 2 weeks ago, so you have to remember that, because all that stuff is still fair game for laboratory, since we're still doing fecal samples. Okay, formerly, any species of the gram-negative bacilli, which these all are, were considered to be very unusual because we rarely encountered them. But now we're encountering them more because of increased susceptibility of immunocompromised patients, new modes of transmission. Well, why don't you slam the door? You guys want a handout? Or would you rather pass
out what the heat is?
Do either of you guys have announcements? Bill, Alex Quinn? Announcements? Announcements?
Oh, my ceiling fell out. But what are we talking about?
CLS Club meeting.
Oh, CLS Club meeting yesterday.
Grade 11.
Grade 11.
Okay. Do you want to say anything about pink sheets or due dates? March 1st?
Sure. Pink sheets?
Or you want to go? You want to go?
Sure.
Okay, that was sort of an announcement.
March 1st. The oldies. You do want to come and visit with them, right?
Yes.
Yeah, but we don't
have to fill out anything.
What day is that kid coming?
March 19th.
So,
the day before Shauna's wedding.
So for the newbies, we fill it out, we give it to you, but do we meet with the people that are coming also, or is it just...
Yes. You give us your top...
Two choices.
Yes. And then what we do is we'll put up a schedule and you can sign in. You'll come and visit with them for about 10 minutes.
Okay.
5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Yeah. And talk about where you want to go, and each facility will talk to you.
Try to get you to
want
to go there.
Oh, yeah.
And then,
of course,
and then when everybody's visited with them, then we'll sit down, we'll assign everybody's spot.
And when will the newbies know where we get it?
Post it that week or?
Sometimes we post it that day.
Yeah, I thought that they just told us.
No, we posted it.
Post it on the door.
Hang it outside. Okay. Film
tomorrow. I got lights.
Or if we.
Okay.
Either that Friday or the next Monday. Okay, so remember to get those sheets in. Okay, as I was saying, many of these gram-negative bacilli that we find in stools, other than the Enterobacteriaceae, shape. Thank you. They were considered quite rare because we didn't find them very much. But now we're seeing them more and more often because of the increased susceptibility to immunocompromised patients, because of new media that we have, better means of detecting them. So the ones we're going to talk about, with the exception of Yersinia, are not Enterobacteriaceae. Yersinia is still in the Enterobacteriaceae. We probably still see that more than some of the others. Three species in the genus Yersinia lipesis, or Yersinia pestis, which is a causative organism of plague. We're not going to do that this week, if you'd like to know. Pseudotuberculosis, which causes a disease known as mesenteric adenitis, and it's very similar in symptoms to appendicitis, so kind of an acute abdominal condition. The one that we see most often in stools as a cause of diarrhea is Yersinia enterocolitica. So that's the one that we're going to kind of look for this week. So enterocolitis or a type of diarrhea. Okay, some characteristics of Yersinia. It does grow well on most routine media. It grows on blood, MAC, SS. There is a special media, so you can add this to your list of media that you are keeping track of with organisms. CIN, stands for Seth Sullivan Ferguson Noliason Audit. Okay, C-A-N. Now, how can you remember that? Yeah, sin, sin. However, okay, somebody listening? Your sinning will grow, but others will also grow. Especially the real hardy Enterobacteriaceae can grow on. So just because your C. colony is growing on CIN does not mean it's Ersinia and nothing else. Ersinia can grow at both 25 and 35. Sometimes the flagella develop better at 25. So we're going to do two plates of CIN. We're going to inoculate two plates for our unknown. And incubate one at 25, which is room temperature. We used to have 25 room temperature, 25 incubator, but I'm not sure. Well, it used to be room 787, I think, over on your side. So I'm not sure whether we have use of that now or not. So I'll check on that. If not, we'll just leave them on the desktop. And we'll do the other one, incubate that in the 37 CO2. Okay, so classically, what Ersinia looks like on CIN media is pink colonies or transparent with pink centers, what we call bullseye colonies. So if you can see, you can see the pink center. Can you see the transparent around it? Vaguely. Okay. So that's kind of what we're looking for Ersinia. Now here's E. coli. Grows very well. Pink colonies. So others will grow on there. But it's a media that is included in some labs. Not every lab uses this. Sometimes they'll do two McConkie plates. Incubate one McConkie at 25 and one at 37. So it just depends on the lab. The organism is widely distributed in lakes and reservoirs, so it's found around water. And contamination from these is how we contract the disease. Okay, let's go on to other characteristics. It is lactose negative. So the pink that we're seeing, back up here, the pink that we're seeing is not lactose from there. But it's mannitol. There's mannitol in there. So organisms that can ferment mannitol will grow in there and turn pink. But don't confuse that with lactose fermentation. Okay, oh, I forgot to mention this slide. This just shows that it is mobile at 25. You can see the cloudiness in there, whereas at 37, you can just see the streak. It's not mobile. So the flagella seem to develop better at 25 degrees, but it doesn't grow at 25. Okay, it is oxidase negative. Now, what is one of the general characteristics of Enterobacteriaceae? They're all oxidase negative. Okay, so this is still Enterobacteriaceae, so it is oxidase negative. Gram-negative short rod, sometimes it exhibits bipolar staining, but not always, and sometimes we can see that in other organisms as well. It is indole positive and catalase positive. Okay, so those are some of the characteristics of Ersinia. Now, here's a chart that compares the three species, Pestis, Tuberculosis, and Aeroplidia. You can see these, they're mostly negative, just about everything, these two. We don't really care about those because we're not going to be doing those. Here's Enterocolitica that we see mostly in the lab. And the characteristics, most common, here's the motility at 25, non-modal at 37. 83% of the time it is indole positive. 90% of the time it is ornithine positive. Now, have we done ornithine? How do we do ornithine? Stab and streak? Just like everything else? Ornithine is an N-decarboxylase reaction. So it's actually ornithine decarboxylase. So now, how do we do it? Do you remember lysine decarboxylase? Overlay. Okay, so you stab it. Overlay. So it's just like lysine, except instead of the amino acid lysine in there, it's got ornithine in it. So we read it the same way. What's a positive reaction?
Purple
and cloudy. What's negative?
Yellow.
Okay. So I think we are going to be doing an ornithine. And then down here is sucrose fermentation. We are going to be doing a sucrose fermentation. It's a tube. It's a liquid. We just inoculate the tube, but it's got an inverted, what we call a Durham tube. It's an upside down little tube inside the big tube. And what's that? That is supposedly there for to trap gas bubbles. Should it ferment the sucrose and produce gas bubbles? But what we're mostly interested in is it doesn't ferment the sucrose. So it's going to change colors. I think it goes from red to yellow if it's positive. But if you see that, it has that inverted tube in there. That's what it's for. Okay, so those are the main characteristics for Ursinia anthropoidea. Let's go on to the family Vibrionaceae. Okay, there are three genera in this family. There's Vibrio, Aeromonas, and Plesiomonas. And we're going to talk about each one of those. These, in general, speaking of all three of the genera, they're gram-negative rods, facultative, oxidase, positive. Okay, so this now is what differentiates them from Enterobacteriaceae. So that's why it's important to screen different colonies, particularly in your blood auger, because they might look just like Enterobacteriaceae, but you screen different colonies looking for oxidase-positive organisms. Vibrio, specifically Vibrio, has polar flagella. Okay, let's take a closer look at Vibrio. There are 11 pathogenic species. We're not going to talk about all 11 of them. I'm just going to mention these three. There's Vibrio cholera, which of course is the causative agent of cholera, and you'll be happy to know we're not going to be working with that one in the lab. We will talk more about the disease state on Wednesday. Okay, Vibrio parahemolyticus. This is what we most commonly see in this country if a patient has diarrheic symptoms. So it causes an acute gastroenteritis. And then there's Vibrio vulnificus, which does not cause an intestinal disease, but it can cause a severe septicemia, which is a blood infection that causes systemic symptoms, can infect wounds. So contaminated water, contaminated soil can get into wounds and cause some severe infections with vulnificus, but it's not one we see very commonly. So we're going to focus mostly, in the lab at least, on parahemolyticus. So the natural habitat for Vibrio species is water. It's an aquatic organism. And it can be found around both freshwater and seawater. Okay. Vibrio usually, again, grows on most routine media. It'll grow on blood. It'll grow on MAC. Probably not the more selective media. But, again, it has its own special media, TCBS. TCBS, put this on your chart as well, stands for thiosulfate citrate thiosulfate sucrose. Can you remember that?
No.
Just think of what TCBS stands for. Thiosulfate citrate sucrose. Okay, this one again is not something that we incorporate as routine media, not in the, as routine battery of media when we're doing diarrheic samples. It kind of depends on the location. In beautiful downtown Provo, oh, he's smiling at me. Beautiful downtown Provo, we're probably not going to use it because this is found mostly in coastal areas where there's access to lakes and oceans, particularly seawater. Salt water. So in the coastal areas, they probably will include this media, but it just kind of depends, again, on the location as to whether or not we include it. We're going to use it today just to work with it to see what it looks like. We can do an enrichment for Vibrio. We can put some of the stool sample in a broth, which is called alkaline peptone water. It has a very high pH, alkaline, so around pH 9. And it probably has some sodium chloride in there, too, to enhance the growth. But it suppresses the growth of the commensal organisms of the normal flora, normal Enterobacteriaceae, for a period of time. So what we have to do, if we use alkaline peptone water, put our sample in there, let it grow for about 5 hours, and then take a sample of that and put it under TCBS. So after 5 hours, it's not going to do as much good. But that's a helpful enrichment process to identify the Vibrio. So I put sodium chloride down here because many of the organisms require extra sodium chloride. We'll take another closer look at that. Gram-negative rods. Now, these in Vibrio species can be either straight or curved, comma-shaped organisms. They tend to be more comma-shaped if they're growing in a broth. When they grow on the stiff media, they're not as comma-shaped. But that's one thing we look for in a gram stain of a fecal sample. What are things we've already learned that we're looking for in a fecal sample?
White blood cells?
Fecal leukocytes.
Absence of negative rods.
Absence of gram-negative rods. Abundant gram-positive cocci, yeast. Those are some of the things we're looking for. So we're really not going to be able to see gram-negative pathogen, or at least the Enterobacteriaceae. I mean, we'll see them. They're there, but we can't differentiate them from the normal flora. However, another thing we're going to look for is these curved rods, comma-shaped. So if we see a lot of those, that's a presumptive identification that we've got some Vibrio in there. Not definitive, but a presumptive ID. So that's another thing we'll add to our list to look for when we're doing a gram stain of stool sampling. Okay, again, it's oxidase positive. So it's not Enterobacteriaceae. It's oxidase positive, and that's one thing that helps to separate it. Okay, here's a gram stain. I don't know if we can see curved rods in there, comma shaped.
I'll see one.
Do you see one? Okay, there's probably, looks like one right in there. I can't see one up in there. Maybe. So there are some in there, but that's kind of what you look for. Again, you see that more in broth than you do in the stool sample or on media, so you may or may not see it. Okay, they are modal, and they're usually modal by a single polar flagella. That's just on one end. And so if we do a hanging drop prep or some type of motility like that, you can see them really darting throughout the media. But we don't often do that. We can just do a motility. Again, the pH 9 and the TCBS is the special auger that we use for Vibrio. But other things will grow on TCBS. So just like CIN, it is not entirely 100% specific for Vibrio. Okay, here's what these two species, cholera and perihemolyticus, look like on sheepdog, which is just routine SBA. Vibrio cholera is what?
Baby
hemolytic. Okay. What Enterobacteriaceae did we say was baby hemolytic, or can be? E. coli. So it might look like E. coli. And there again is a good reason to do screening for oxidase. This should be oxidase positive, but we're not going to see a whole lot of Vibrio cholera here in this country, usually third world countries, or people that have been traveling maybe to those countries and back. So the doc usually has to tell the lab to look for Vibrio, especially Vibrio cholera. And we will look for perihemolytic because that's much more common, but we're usually not going to look specifically for Vibrio cholera unless there's some index of suspicion. Perihemolyticus, on the other hand, is gamhemolytic. Not baby hemolytic on blood. So that can look very much like any of the other Enterobacteriaceae. Okay, here's TCBS. It usually starts out as green media. And what does the S stand for?
Sucrose.
So it's got sucrose in there, so it's not lactose, but it's a sucrose fermenter. So cholera will ferment sucrose and turn yellow on TCBS. Whereas perihemolyticus does not ferment sucrose, and everything is green. So this is a media that they will use, again, if they suspect Vibrio and want to try to look for that specifically rather than the Enterobacteriaceae. And specifically for cholera, too. It'll help point that one out a little more definitively. Okay, here's the sodium chloride tolerance test, I guess you can call it, where they have tubes of varying concentrations of sodium chloride. Okay, this one has no sodium chloride in it, and for this particular organism, which is probably perihemolyticus, it doesn't grow. Because perihemolyticus requires extra salt. Vibrio does not. Vibrio will grow without the extra salt. But perihemolyticus and bolitheus, for that matter, do not grow without extra salt. So here's a 3.5% salt solution. You can see the growth in there. This is 6%. It gets up to 10%. It looks like that's a little too high. It's starting to inhibit it. So somewhere there between 3 and 6%. On TSI, it's usually A over A. Now, if it is a non-lactose fermenter, why is it A over A?
Because it's
What sugars are in TSI?
Glucose,
lactose, and sucrose. Okay, so it's possible that if it is a non-lactose fermenter, you can still get A over A if it is fermenting sucrose. So you need to start looking at your plates. If you look at a McConkie and it's pink, what is that? Lactose fermenter? Okay, that's a lactose fermenter. But what if the TSI is K over A? K over A.
Glucose
fermenter. It ferments glucose, but it's a non-lactose fermenter. So why is it pink on Mac and K over A on TSI? We had that, didn't we? A couple weeks ago, some of you had that on your E. coli. You were getting a K over A on TSI, and it was pink on the McConkie. I don't have an answer for that. It may be the time factor. It may be that over time it was using up all of the lactose that was in there with the sucrose and reverting back to alkaline. So, but the point is, what you need to look for is correlating these media or in the biochemicals. So if you see a colony, what about a pink colony or what about a colorless colony on Mac and A over A on TSI?
Sucrose.
So then you think sucrose. Because initially you think, well, it's a lactose fermenter on Mac, so it should be, or I mean it's a non-lactose fermenter on Mac, so it should be K over A on TSI. But it is still possible to get an A over A if it is fermenting sucrose. So you need to be correlating these media and tubes of thinking, problem solving, thinking about what possibilities could be going on here. Okay, let's go on to Aeromonas. Aeromonas, there's four species here, Hydrophila, Cambiae, Sobria, and Salmonicida. We are only really looking for one in a stool sample as a cause of diarrhea, and that's Aeromonas hydrophila. Sometimes Cambiae can be found there, but it's going to look just like Hydrophila, so we really don't speciate those. If we find an Aeromonas, we'll just call it Aeromonas hydrophila. Salmonicida is usually found in other animals. It's not often recovered from humans. So a frequent one that we're concerned with is Hydrophila. Aeromonas can exist in both fresh and seawater, probably a little bit more in the fresh water. In fact, we can find it in sink traps, drain pipes in the house. It can grow in things like that. Recovered from water faucets, from distilled water. So usually we get contamination from, or we get infected from contaminated water or again contaminated soil if we actually get that in our food or our water or something. So it's not always a pathogen. Sometimes it's a pathogen, sometimes it's not. If it's the only pathogen we find in the stool sample and the patient has symptoms of diarrhea, then it's most likely a pathogen. Oxidase positive again. Some species, first three species are mobile, so Hydrophila should be mobile. Salmonicida is not mobile. Indole positive.
Wait, can you say that again? Which one's mobile?
First three species are mobile, and Aeromonas hydrophila is the one we're going to be looking at. That should be mobile. Salmonicida is non-mobile, so that's why there's a plus or minus there. And indole positive. With Aeromonas, we can get different types of infections, so we can get a cellulitis or a wound infection, and again, that would probably come from contaminated water or soil that happens to get into the wound or the abrasion or something to let it spread through the body. The acute diarrhea, again, that's what we're looking for with stool samples, can cause septicemia, and it can cause miscellaneous ones, like a urinary tract infection or ear infections or even meningeal meningitis. Rare, but it's possible. Okay, as far as pathogenic mechanisms or virulence factors, it secretes both a toxin and it does invade. Grows well on routine media. It's usually beta hemolytic on blood agar. So, it's going to look like E. coli or other Enterobacteriaceae on blood agar. grows on Mac, grows on most of these other media, so we don't need anything special for Aeromonas. It's just something that we need to keep in the back of our mind as a possibility, particularly if we screen and it's oxidase positive. So I hope you're understanding the importance of screening these colonies, particularly on blood auger for oxidase in a stool sample. Okay, TSI can be either KOA or AOA. It can vary somewhat.
On the conchi, is it usually pink or not? Or
it can be both. The majority of them are non-lactose emitters. Okay, let's do plesiomonas. Plesiomonas, there's only one species in this genera. It's called Plesiomonas shigelloides. It does not survive well in seawater, so this one we find mostly in freshwater. And it does cause a mild watery diarrhea, but it's mostly in the tropical, subtropical regions of the world. So we don't see a whole lot of it here, again, unless people have been traveling and have brought it back with them. It does produce an enterotoxin that causes the diarrhea. It's gram-negative rod, as is Aeromonas, they all are, but they're straight-sided. They don't curve, not comma-shaped. Modal grows well on blood, MAC, and so usually in non-lactose fermenter. So we don't need anything special for Plesiomonas. It's KRA on TSI and oxidase mingle positive. Okay. Right away. Compliments of Shelby. She sent these pictures. Is this yours?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it a cat?
Yeah.
And guess what her cat's name is?
Sushi.
Sushi.
Did you turn the water on?
It's my little one's bathroom, and he's really not using his bathroom at all, so it's always dry in there.
That wasn't my question.
You should have turned on the water.
Yeah.
Oh, that's something Bill would do. Okay, we need to wake up because we're now talking about Campylobacter. This is probably the most common organism that we see. At least that's what the literature says. We probably encounter Campylobacter in diarrhea samples more often than Salmonella or Shigella. There are different species of Campylobacter. And statistics say it can be recovered up to 30% of samples, fecal samples, in patients that have acute diarrhea. So this is one that we need to look for. Remember when we first started GI week one, we said there were three organisms that were lab needs to look for? Yes. What were those three?
Salmonella,
Shigella, and Campylobacter. Right, because it is so common. So we need to understand Campylobacter. Let's see. Again, we'll talk about the disease state more on Wednesday, but it does cause kind of a cramping, abdominal pain, and bloody diarrhea. It is also ubiquitous in domestic animals. So chickens, turkey, waterfowl, things like that can be contaminated with Campylobacter, as can household animals on occasion. I have never contracted Campylobacter from my cats. So I'd say cats are okay. Another reason my cats are okay. Yes?
So that H. pylori is a Campylobacter?
Well, oh, did I? Oh, I forgot to talk about this. Good. Let's go back. What'd I do? I don't know what I did. There are these four species. These four species, Campylobacter jejuni, coli, fetus, and sputorum. Okay, the one we most frequently encounter in the lab is jejuni. Sputorum is found in the oral cavity, in the crevices of gingiva, but in its normal flora. It doesn't cause disease in the oral cavity. Now, why did I put H. pylori down here? Don't know. Does anybody care?
Yes.
No. It used to be a Campylobacter. It used to be Campylobacter pylori. So what is it now? What's the H stand for? Helical bacteria. Okay, so they put it in its own genus. But, so that means that it's very similar to Campylobacter in terms of what it looks like and growth characteristics.
And if someone had an ulcer caused by H. pylori, could you recover that in
Usually we don't do fecal samples for peptic ulcers.
But if they also had diarrhea and an ulcer, would you see it? It's possible.
But we don't usually do stool samples for that, so I don't know how well it grows on that media. We usually do urea breath test initially and maybe antibodies to pylori. But this is the one that does cause peptic ulcer. We didn't know organisms caused ulcer. Okay, Campylobacter is both invasive and produces an endotoxin. I put Caryblair transport up there just to remind you again that that's the special transport media that we use for most all fecal samples. What does it do? What's its mechanism of action?
pH.
Changes the pH, which helps to maintain the growth of the organism. This one we can refrigerate. Sometimes they will do a cold enrichment. They will also do this for Yersinia on occasion. They can put it in the refrigerator for 1 to 2 weeks or so and enhance the growth of it. Not put the organism in there, but put the stool sample in there. Don't try this at home. But usually we don't want to wait a week or two or three to identify it. So it's not done very frequently, but it is a procedure that can enhance the growth of Campylobacter. It is microaerophilic. Now, here's another special media. How many special media we have learned today?
Three.
Okay, this is a campy SBA. So, instead of regular SBA, it has a 10% suspension of sheep red blood cells. What does regular SBA have? 5% suspension. So this is 10% suspension of sheep red blood cells in the media. It also has several antibiotics in there, which is similar to what other media that has a lot of antibiotics? MPM. With a lot of antibiotics. And that's, of course, to inhibit growth of most of the other organisms that are in the stool sample, most of the other gram-negative rods. However, again, if you've got a very hardy organism, you can get some minimal growth on campy SBA that is not just campy. Okay, then what we have to do, after we streak for isolation on campy SBA, we have to incubate it at 42 degrees in enhanced CO2. So we don't have a 42-degree CO2 incubator. What we usually do is put it in a candle jar. Do you know what a candle jar is?
Yeah,
that's
what Bill was
doing. Oops. Let's see. Where's my candle jar? There's my candle jar. Okay, so candle jar, yeah, it's a big mayonnaise jar or something like that. And we put our plates in there. Sometimes you can put some tubes in there, too. And then we light a candle, put the lid on while the candle is still burning, and the candle will burn until it burns out the oxygen. It's not an anaerobic environment, so it doesn't completely burn out all the oxygen, but it does create a microaerophilic environment with less oxygen and more CO2. So that's what we've used, and then we stick this in the 42-degree incubator. Yeah, let me go back here. And it is kind of slow growing. So we usually let it grow for about 48 hours. So we're going to inoculate our campy SBA plates today, or our unknown, and we're going to stick them in the incubator. Bring them to us. Bring all your campy SBAs to us so that we can put them in the, get them all in the candle jar together so we don't have to keep opening and closing it. And then we will light the candle jar, light the candle, and stick it in the 42, and we will not open it until Wednesday. Okay? So we don't look at it tomorrow.
So is this a possible unknown?
That's definitely a possible unknown. Any of these are possible unknowns.
So then how are we supposed to know it's an unknown?
You'll find out on Wednesday. You'll have other things that you can work with tomorrow. But we'll look at our campy plates on Wednesday. Okay, so it's gram-negative. Now, it has special shape as well. It can be curved. It can be S-shaped. Typically, we look for these gull wing shapes, which is like this, gull wings, like a bird in flight. So actually what it is two curved organisms together. But that's another thing we look for in the stool sample when we do a gram stain. So curved organism could be, if we just see single curved organisms, could be what, besides campy?
The other one.
The other one. Vibrio. Yes. The other one doesn't work.
Oh.
Okay, but look for these gull wings. See if you can see any of these by any chance. Spiral, whatever. Okay, now, it does have darting motility, so again, it's going to be zipping through if we do a pin drop method. But mostly, what we're going to look at is the colonies. They are described as a kind of gray-looking, runny, moist colonies. So, well, where are my colonies? Well, we'll get to that in a minute. Okay, I'll show you the colonies here in a minute. It is oxidase positive, catalase positive, and then the only other test we do is a test for sensitivity or resistance to two new antibiotics, which are called malodexic acid and cefalosporin. So we just have two discs, like we've done the other antibiotic tests. We do these on regular SBA, not CAMP SBA, but regular SBA, and just put it in 37 degree CO2. Now, the reason we can do that is because we've already isolated. After we isolated initially on the CAMP SBA, then it will go better at 37 on regular media. So just streak it, streak for confluent growth, put the two discs on 37 degrees CO2. And we sometimes can read it in 24 hours. If not, stick it back in and incubate it for 48 hours. Should be sensitive to malodexic acid. Any zone size is sensitive and resistant to cephalopin. It is asaccharolytic. So what does that mean for TSI?
K over K.
K over K. So what does that look like? What did we talk about last week?
No, that's what H2S is.
What did we talk about last week?
K over K is...
just red.
Last week. Non-fermenters.
It's all red. It's all red.
Non-fermenters. They're all K over K, so it looks like a non-fermenter. No change in the TSI, so it's asaccharolytic. Okay, now, there's our candle jar. Okay, this is the Gram stain. They're tiny rods, and sometimes, again, you can't always see the comma or the gull-wing-shaped organisms. I don't know if there's any in there or not. I don't know what this is here. They don't stain real well with saffronine, so usually you need to leave the saffronine on for about a minute to get the counter stain. Okay, here's what we mean by the runny, moist colonies. So they might be just individual colonies like this, but you can see they kind of look moist. They're not the dry colonies. Oftentimes they run together. Depends on how heavy the growth is. But these are the runny, moist colonies that grow together. So that's typical of Campylobacter. Campylobacter on Campy SBA, you're going to see pretty good growth, or colonies spread out. If it's something else going on there, because of the enhanced temperature and all the antibiotics in there, you're not going to see growth all over the plate. You might see some in the primary quadrant. I've done Gram stains on other things that are growing on Campy, and the Gram stains look really, really weird because it just distorts the growth since it's trying so hard to grow on that media. So you can usually tell just by looking at it whether you've got Campylobacter or not. Okay, here we go with what we're going to do in lab. Now, these organisms are not easy to have a flow diagram. So I've just kind of picked out some tests that we're going to do. So this is kind of a different approach to doing these organisms. Okay, for our knowns, we are going to be doing a non-lactose fermenting E. coli. Now, is that pathogen or normal flora?
Depends.
Usually it's normal flora. Non-lactose fermenter. It's not often that we see it, but occasionally we can get a non-lactose fermenting E. coli. Okay, so we're going to streak that. So have you all got this list?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to streak that to SBA, MAC, and we're going to do TSI today because that's pure culture. We're going to save ourselves a day. Okay, Campylobacter, we're going to have this as a known. We're going to streak it on blood, MAC, Campy SBA, which you give to us after you've streaked it. You're going to do a TSI and a Gram stain. We won't worry about doing a Gram stain on E. coli. I don't know what that looks like. Okay, Yersinia, enterocolitica is a possibility. We're going to streak it to blood MAC. We're going to do two CINs, incubate one at 25, one at 35, 37, do a TSI and Gram stain. Vibrio, parahemolyticus, blood MAC, TCBS, TSI and Gram stain, and Aeromonas. SBA, MAC. You don't have to do anything special for that if you're signing grams there.
With the campylobacter, where you do the sheep blood, should we do two discs on two then?
No, let's not do the discs. Okay. Well, actually, I guess we could do the discs on SBA. Not on Camp SBA. Where am I? Not on the Camp SBA. But we could put the discs on here.
Yeah.
Since it's already grown up. So, yeah, let's do that. Saves the day. So put the malodic scansin and cephalothin discs on the primary quadrant in on regular blood for Campy. Okay, so do these in pairs again. And then for your unknown, blood, MAC, Campy SBA, two CINs, so 125, 137, and a TCBS. Now, can't do anything else in there except Gram stain. I have to do the Gram stain because we don't know if it's pure culture or not. Tomorrow, if you have Enterobacteriaceae, remember, Enterobacteriaceae are still fair game. Follow the flow diagram that you used a week ago, 2 weeks ago, when we did GI week one. Follow the flow diagram. If you have a suspected, well, no, these are your knowns. Okay. Campy, we've already done the TSI. I had TSIs in here, and then I remembered we've already done those, so don't do another TSI. Just oxidase, catalase, and these are the discs which we've already done. So all you have to do is an additional oxidase and catalase for the known campy.
So don't do TSIs for all
TSIs, those. We've already done. We'll do those today, so you don't have to do these again. Cross those off. Okay, Yersinia, we're going to do an indole oxidase. We're going to set up an ornithine decarboxylase and a sucrose. Now, Yersinia is also on the flowchart. Why? Why is it on the flowchart?
It's oxidase.
It's Enterobacteriaceae. It is still Enterobacteriaceae, so it is on the flowchart. Anybody see where it is? What's the TSI reaction? TSI is usually K over A, and there's phenylalanine and urea. So we can set those up as well on the flowchart. But I want you to see these reactions for Yersinia. So, set up, well, the indole oxidase are pretty easy. They're all easy to do. I don't do the inoculating, but do an addition what it says on the flow diagram. So, you've got the TSI, the phenylalanine, and the urea. Okay, for Vibrio, indole oxidase, sucrose, and a lysine decarboxylase. And you might have to look in your book to get some of these reactions if they're not, if I don't have them on your sheet. And Aeromonas, oxidase, indole, catalase, and lysine decarboxylase. So there's not a whole lot of tests. They're all easy tests that we should be able to set up easily tomorrow. Those are for the knowns. Okay, now for your unknowns. Do the same thing you did for the knowns. So if you suspect you have Enterobacteriaceae, what are you going to do?
Follow
a flowchart. If you suspect, and campy you won't know about until Wednesday, but if you suspect you have campy based on your growth on the campy plate and perhaps your Gram stain, that's all you do. TSI, oxidase, catalase, malodic cephalothin. If you suspect any of these, follow what we follow. Just do this. Just do this stuff. So, how are we going to initially pick out Aeromonas?
It'll be moist.
It'll be what?
Not the one that's all that's moist.
Well, it is kind of gooey looking. But what does it look like on sheep blood auger in addition?
Beta already.
Okay. So, beta hemolysis would be a good clue there. Vibrio could be oxidase positive, so that's one clue. Whereas Yersinia is going to be oxidase negative. So there should be initial clues from the way it grows on the media, from the Gram stain, from the oxidase reaction as to what you're doing. You're not doing a plesiomonas.
Is it easier to see the beta hemolysis if we stout?
It might be. that doesn't really tell us a whole lot. It's beta hemolytic, you should use it to be able to see it around the colony.
So, did you say Aeromonas or Vibrio was beta
hemolytic? Aeromonas. Vibrio depends on the species, but that's on, well, Vibrio cholera is beta hemolytic, but we're not going to be doing Vibrio cholera. So, we won't worry about that one. Okay, so everybody understands what we're doing then? All right. Let's go get our samples.